WeVents starts Friday.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear about some state and local politics, including the governor signing the gun bill the other day. And we'll also talk about whether or not everybody in Florida needs flood insurance. Later on, we'll talk with one of the high school students who is preparing to take part in several demonstrations here in the Tampa Bay area in the next few weeks. We'll talk about that later on in the program. First, one listener comment, and it comes from a high school student who is planning to take part in a march against guns in the next few days. Here's that message from a local high school student.
Hi, my name is Madison Rambrack, and I go to Tampa Catholic High School. I am a senior, and I'm one of the student organizers for March for Our Lives Tampa, which is taking place on March 24th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Check us out on Facebook for more information and details, and come out and march with us to stand in solidarity with gun victims and call for positive legislative action. This event is open to all people who want to see a change. So, thank you.
And we're going to have more on that March for Lives, March 24th, as we get closer and closer to that day. Well, right now we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And it's a panel discussion about state and local politics. And it always features a liberal and a Democrat, and usually a couple of journalists or a couple of professors. So here's Florida This Week from this past Friday night on the PBS station WEDU-TV. Coming up next, the legislature passes a gun bill. It's now up to the governor. A Hillsborough County commissioner sticks his neck out to try to limit semi-automatic weapon sales in the county. The legislature targets the state's teachers union. And a FEMA official suggests forget those flood maps. Every homeowner in Florida should get flood insurance. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Patrick Mantega is the editor and publisher of La Gazzetta and a Democrat. Amy Holyfield is the deputy managing editor for politics, sports, and features at the Tampa Bay Times. Daryl Paulson is a professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. And George Kretikos is mayor of Clearwater and a Republican. Well, thank you for coming. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Well, on Thursday, the Florida legislature narrowly approved a gun and school safety bill following the Parkland school shooting that killed 17 people. And on Friday, the governor signed the bill.
The bill creates a $67 million guardian program that would enable school employees and many teachers to carry guns if they go through law enforcement training and their school districts agree to participate. Governor Rick Scott has said several times that he's against arming teachers, but legislators approve the program anyway. Under Florida law, Scott can sign the bill but use his line item veto to eliminate the money set aside for the Guardian program. The bill does not ban semi-automatic weapons, which many Parkland students had demanded. The measure would raise the minimum age to buy rifles from 18 to 21 and extend a 3-day waiting period for handgun purchases to include long guns. Other provisions would create new mental health programs for schools and establish an anonymous tip line where students and others could report threats to schools. The bill would also ban bump stocks.
So, Amy, there were still some people on the left and on the right that disagreed with this bill.
Absolutely. I mean, let's start with the NRA. They made it clear they were totally not happy with this bill because of the restrictions on gun owners. You had teachers who were against it. You had the NAACP, the Black Caucus, concerns about arming school personnel and what risk that might put to minority students who were already shown not favor But even the governor signed the bill and said, you know, he's against arming teachers, and is and made it clear that he's interested in maybe having the money redirected from arming school personnel to helping with other resources in terms of safety in schools.
Does it make it harder for the governor to run if he decides to run for U.S. Senate? Does it make it harder for him to run in the fall, given that the NRA doesn't like him signing this bill?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think even though those groups are against it, I mean, a lot of it, the fact that it's remarkable that this bill passed the legislature. I mean, this Republican-dominated legislature to pass restrictions in Florida, that's a huge thing. And even Bill Nelson today said it was a step toward, this legislation was a step toward changes that need to be made. So I don't know that it will hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Darryl, what do you think about the because the with the NRA opposition, this is one of the few times the NRA hasn't gotten its way in Tallahassee.
Yeah, well, this bill passed the Senate only by a 20 to 18 vote. So switch to one vote, we had a tie vote, it wouldn't have passed at all. So you had people on both the left who didn't like it because they didn't think it went far enough, and people on the right who thought it went way too far. As to Governor Scott and whether it will have a negative impact if he decides to run for the Senate, I don't think so, because if you look at public opinion, both nationally and in Florida, there's overwhelming support for the kinds of proposals that the legislature just passed. So he may not do any better among Democratic voters, but he may do much better among independent voters because of this action.
George, do you think that the passage of this bill would stop something like what happened in Parkland 3 weeks ago? I mean, the provisions of this bill, would it help to prevent future school shootings?
I would like to think so, but if you're going to do something like Mr. Cruz did, you're going to find a way to do it. And unfortunately, we've got to find a better system to prevent people from entering the school grounds initially. And the school resource officer is a great step for us, but we have to make sure that it doesn't fall back on the cities to fund those programs.
So if we increase the number of school resource officers and harden the schools even more, and some of this bill addresses that, but it should be up to the state to fund that and not from the local school district or local communities.
It should be the state of the school district. It shouldn't fall on the local municipalities, because then that means we have to redirect our resources that are limited and will probably be limited even more in the future by the state legislature.
Do you feel like there is going to be a greater burden on the city of Clearwater and local municipalities as a result of this bill?
If the state and the school boards do not provide the funding for the school resource officers in Clearwater, we anticipate in the first year the cost would be between $1 and $1.25 million that we would have to redirect from other programs in the city of Clearwater that we now fund.
And I don't suppose that you have that money in stashed away in the savings account.
No, we don't.
Patrick, one thing that wasn't in this bill that the teenagers in Parkland wanted was that they wanted a ban on these semi-automatic weapons, these assault-style weapons. They didn't get that in this bill.
And they're not going to get it so long as the state's controlled by Republicans. It's not going to happen. You know, the Democrats who supported this, the people who wanted this to happen, felt this was a baby step. And it was a baby step. It was nice to have something happen, considering the years that we've had nothing happen on the issue of gun control, except to expand the ability of people to own and use guns. So, you know, as a Democrat, you look at this and you understand that if people are really, if they really want this to happen, they're going to have to change how they're voting.
Yeah, a lot of this has to do with finances. I mean, if you put a school resource officer in every school in the state of Florida, which would be about 4,000 of them, the cost is $400 million. Well, the legislature didn't provide that. So what's their option? Let's train teachers to use guns and provide 10 teachers in every school. The cost of that is about $40,000 a year for the training that they would experience. So you're dealing with $40,000 per school for 10 teachers, supposedly, who will be armed with the weapons and trained on how to use them, as opposed to $400 million. And so it becomes a cost issue, unless Florida citizens are willing to cough up $400 million to pay for highly trained police resource officers. It's not going to happen.
But what a lot of people here want to deal with is the gun culture of America, not just the specifics of whether we have a resource officer, who that resource officer is, the specific of what guns for sale, how many days. people would really like us to discuss the gun culture of America and try to reduce our love and desire for guns. I mean, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting to now see the very tip of that conversation.
Amy, I know the largest school districts in the state, the majority, which represent the majority of school students in the state, have already gone on the record and said, we don't want to arm school employees, teachers or coaches or otherwise. So with the school districts, pretty much the big ones saying, we don't want to do this, yet the legislature and the governor okayed this bill, it's not likely, is it, that we're going to see armed school employees at many schools across the state?
I mean, every school district has that option. So I think you will see some take it, absolutely. But I think the fact that they put it in the bill, I mean, that was important to sort of easing the anxiety of people who are so against the idea.
So one last question, that is, what happens to the energy that was out there that said that we've got to do something serious about protecting our kids? And there's still, I think, some people that think that this bill didn't go far enough. So what happens to that energy? And there's a lot of teenagers, a lot of high school students who are really motivated. They're going to walk out of some of their high schools this coming week. What happens to that energy? Where does it go?
I think it keeps going. I mean, we've got this march in Washington a week after next. I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to translate into affecting the election. You know, that's usually young people aren't the most reliable voters.
The real test will be whether they sign up to register to vote.
Exactly, but I don't think this energy is going anywhere. I think it has been something very different, and I think the fact that it happened while the legislature was in session, even though that's about to be over, I feel like the energy is going to keep going.
Well, I think this is going to be very difficult to sustain. I'll give another point of view. I mean, we've never had a case in the past where they've been able to sustain this over a long period of time. I do think that the situation is different. I do think it's affected Americans unlike ever before. I do think that the activities of the students in this case at Parkland have energized the nation to want and demand something better for our schools. But at the same time, many of these high school students are soon going to graduate, soon going to go on to college. Will that movement be sustained there? If it is, it's a miracle and it's a first.
Okay. Well, Hillsborough County Commissioner Les Miller this week wanted to do something about gun violence, so he proposed a ban on the sale of assault-style weapons in the county.
The governor wants to remove me. That's his right. He has the law to do that. If he wants to fine me, he can. But I have the right to stand up and say what I want to say, and that is we should not be selling assault weapons anywhere.
He made the proposal even though the state legislature passed a law preventing cities and county governments from enacting their own local gun laws. Miller is a military veteran. His motion failed to get any support from fellow commissioners. By introducing the motion, Miller risked a fine and possible removal from office because of that state law preempting local law when it comes to guns. Miller, though, says he will keep trying.
Patrick, why did Miller introduce this, knowing that he could face penalties?
I think it was frustration. And you know, Miller's been serving the community for a long time, and he has some personal experience with gun violence and understands how this really hurts his community as well as the overall community. And so I think he just got fed up with it and said, the heck with it. You know, it's very interesting to show you just how bad the gun culture is that the state would have a law that says you can't do anything locally about gun control. And so, you know, I'm glad he did it. He was not successful in the ban. He did, you know, get his fellow commissioners to deal with going to a 5-day waiting period. And that was amazing considering that whole group was Republican who voted that way.
Amy, Miller says he's going to try again. I mean, he's not backing down. So is there any indication that the governor or the state is going to impose a penalty or try to remove him from office?
I haven't heard that, but I don't see why not. I mean, the law was made. I mean, I was going to say it's not just you can't do it. It's we're going to penalize you severely. We're going to kill your career here by removing you from office. I think it's amazingly brave stand in the face of what I say, the gun environment that has been enacted in Florida in terms of legislation and lawmaking, it's interesting to see some nicks going into it.
It's primarily a symbolic gesture. I mean, we knew and he knew it wasn't going to happen, but at the same time, he wanted attention focused on this issue. His son was shot in a random incident at Florida A&M University at a graduation party, so he really has experience to talk to this issue. And I admire him greatly. Any politician who is willing to put his career on the line and engage in what amounts to a profile and courage situation, my hat's off to that individual.
George, there are a lot of laws, preemption laws, that the state legislature has passed that said that we're the final say. Local communities cannot pass their own laws, not just with guns, but vacation rentals and all minimum wage laws and that sort of thing. What do the mayors of Florida feel about the state barring you from passing a local ordinance?
Let cities do it. Is a mantra that the League of Mayors and the Florida League of Cities has adopted. The cities are creatures of the state government. They have absolute control over us. I commend, Commissioner Miller for what he did. I have said publicly that it doesn't make any sense to me why you need to have an assault weapon. That's for military, for police. It's not for the, you don't need that, in my opinion. And I'm glad that he did that. I don't think that the governor would make him a martyr by removing him from office. I would be very surprised if that would happen. But I think if all of us speak out, then somebody, the seed, I think, has been planted by Parkland.
Mm-hmm. That there would be further gun legislation than what was passed.
I mean, I go back to the Vietnam War when, we started talking, as college students about what you should do, and slowly that movement grew. That was, 50 years ago now.
Okay.
This generation doesn't.
When you talk about these other laws that stop cities from doing these things, very few of them come with punishment, though. And only the gun is the only one I know where, the gun lobby is so strong to have done this.
Wow. Well, Florida lawmakers passed two sweeping education bills this week that boost funding for Bright Futures college scholarships and create two new school vouchers and make it harder for teachers' unions to exist.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran was a big backer of both provisions, the one that creates vouchers for children who are bullied. He also backed the provision that makes it easier to decertify teachers' unions if their membership falls below 50% of eligible employees. Senate Democrats decried the move, as did some Republicans. Brandon Republican Tom Lee said it's seen as a slap in the face of teachers of the state. And Lee added that the legislature does not do enough for working people. But many Republicans said the 50% standard was not unreasonable and that advancing the bullying proposal would get students out of bad classroom situations.
Daryl, let's start with the teachers' union decertification. Is that a good idea?
Not really. We want teachers to teach in our schools, and now we're asking teachers to be trained on how to use weapons in our school, but we don't want them to speak out in our schools about their teaching profession. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. That 50% requirement, I understand the rationale. You can say we want a majority of teachers to support what the union is going to do. But on the other hand, there are few unions these days, given that you don't have closed shops and people have to join the union. There are few unions that can meet that 50% quota. So why doesn't it apply to all unions? Why just teachers? It's because Republicans right now hate teachers, always have. I mean, they've always been at loggerheads with one another.
Well, that's exactly the question. I mean, why was the teachers' union singled out? And could the teachers' union say, hey, you can't just pass a law decertifying us. You've got to pass a law decertifying all unions if they fall below 50%. George, you want to comment about
that? Well, since you introduced me as a Republican, I've got to say that all Republicans don't hate teachers. Okay. I was at the schools last week for Dr. Seuss Day, and my voice, I think, cracked, and I only read in four classes. I don't see how a teacher does what a teacher does 5 days a week, you know, 8 hours a day. So I think we need to give a hats off to our teachers for the work that they do. And if we take the bullies, you know, if we take the good students out of the classroom, that only is going to leave the bullies in the classroom. That's not going to make the teacher's job any easier.
Patrick, one of the things that they did, too, was in decertifying the unions, Tom Lee of Brandon spoke out against it. He's a Republican. What do you make of Lee speaking out on behalf of teachers' unions? And is that a good thing for him politically in the future? Bad thing? What do you make?
Well, Lee's, I would consider, a pretty moderate Republican. I think he's also a very reasonable person, and I think he understands that without teachers' unions, how is there going to be a discussion with the school district about what teachers really need, what they want? You know, a lot of this is not just about money. A lot of it is about, you know, certifications and the control of the classroom. And so I think that in Hillsborough County and other counties, you have great relationships between unions and districts, and trying to figure out how to best use these contracts, how best to help teachers do their job. So without this collective bargaining issue, I think it's a real problem, and I think Lee understands that.
Amy?
I was just going to say, we got to talk about the vouchers piece of this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. Yeah.
It's really remarkable what is in this legislation in terms of funding. Extra funding for vouchers. They're talking about taking part of the sales tax and allowing that to be devoted to vouchers. That's just remarkable. When you think of how a budget's put together and the money that's funding government, that they would take piece of it to this program that has blossomed from a $50 million program when it started in 2001 to almost $800 million program.
And we know a lot of the school districts around the state and here in the Tampa Bay area, they're having money trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you think about the union piece of this, you think about the voucher piece of this. I mean, you can see the argument over what about our public schools and where is the support for the public schools instead of trying to build this thing over here. It's the constant. We've had this argument ever since this started. But you see this legislation every year. You see different things that are up, that are made to support charter schools. You see different things that hurt public schools.
Okay. Well, the head of FEMA's flood insurance program had a message for Floridians this week. Storms do not pay attention to flood maps. So it may be a good idea for every homeowner here in Florida to carry flood insurance.
Roy Wright, who oversees FEMA's flood insurance program, told the Miami Herald, if your driver's license says Florida, you need flood insurance. By law, only homeowners who are in high-risk areas are required to buy flood insurance. The federal flood insurance program is now $20 billion in debt, largely because of Hurricanes Irma and Harvey last summer, and because Congress has designed the flood insurance program in such a way that people who live in areas prone to flooding get discounted flood insurance.
So, George, is a lesson from us in Hurricane Irma this summer that we can't tell where the hurricane's going to go or which neighborhoods are going to flood, so more of us need flood insurance?
I think that it would be helpful if the head of FEMA goes to Iowa and Missouri and Minnesota, upstate New York, up and down the East Coast to remind people that they also need flood insurance, because Florida has been a donor state in terms of flood insurance over the years. And to say that every Floridian needs to have flood insurance without going to other states and suggesting that their residents need flood insurance is just wrong.
All right, so the potential for flooding, not just here in Florida, along the Mississippi and many other parts of the country.
Absolutely. Yeah. And is he sending that message to everybody else? Is the federal government looking at a national disaster insurance program that I know, you know, Congressman Young, Congressman Jolly, Representative Crist have been talking about, as well as our senators, you know, to suggest that maybe we need to do that as opposed to putting the burden on Floridians?
Just going to add, this is a program that is $20 billion in debt, and they're looking to double enrollment. They're looking to make it more solvent than it is. And so you get this very alarmist message from the head of the flood program. It's true. The storm went across the state, and there were all kinds of effects.
Well, most Americans subsidize flood insurance, especially for the wealthy in the United States, which shouldn't happen. The wealthier people tend to live close to the water, and they're the ones that are likely to experience the most problem. And yet they don't pay the full cost to me in terms of their liability. And so that's spread out among other individuals who live in less flood-prone areas. And that's got to change. And you have a situation now where 50% of the people that live in a hazardous flood area don't even have flood insurance today. It doesn't make any sense, but people often do crazy things.
Because they just choose not to buy it.
Yeah. I live in Mount Pinellas. It's 45 feet high. So I live in a non-flood zone, but few people have that luxury.
During the hurricane, I drove out to Polk County right afterwards, and huge areas are flooded. And who thinks about Polk County as a flood zone, you know? And and so, you know, Florida's constantly doing development, constantly changing our landscape. And stormwater system fails, other systems fail, and all of a sudden, you thought you were on high and dry land, and it had been for 20 years, and all of a sudden it changes. So, you know, it's a message that should be heeded, but I think the other message should also be Florida shouldn't be a donor state here.
Right. Okay, so what would it take to get market rate flood insurance across the country? If we are subsidizing people that live along the beaches and along the waterfront, who would it be up to get market rates for flood insurance?
Part of the problem is that whenever there's a natural disaster, FEMA comes in and with the president and the governor issues a declaration of disaster. And then you start qualifying for low-cost loans. Well, that's fine, but it also means that, hey, maybe I don't need the insurance, and I can wait for the federal government to come in and bail me out with the low-cost insurance. Yeah.
All right. Before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? George, let's start with you, your other big story.
I'm going to bring up daylight savings time, because I know everybody's excited about having extra sunlight at the end of the day, but think about the kids who are going to school, especially the elementary school kids now who would be walking to school and would be pitch black.
All right. Amy, your other big story.
Has to be what's going on in Tampa Bay this weekend. It's unbelievable. We've got the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, the Valspar with Tiger Woods, Gasparilla Music Fest, Strawberry Festival, Lightning's Home. Like, come on. There's so much to do.
Great time to be in Tampa
Bay. Spring training.
All right. Spring training. Exactly. Patrick, your other big story.
Well, we're a year out from the Tampa mayor race, and it's already kicked off. We have two candidates this month who are going to be doing campaign kickoffs, at Taranchek and Topher Morrison. We have David Strass, who looks like he's hiring a team. We have Jane Castor and Harry Cohen, who've got PACs. And we've got Michael Suarez out knocking on doors. So it looks like it's already begun.
All right. Daryl, your other big story.
Well, my story is about opioids. The legislature just passed a bill yesterday requiring pain patients to go back to their doctor every 3 to 7 days to get a script. I think that's a terrible policy. A few years ago, Florida had pill mills, and they focused on closing down those pill mills. We used to have, of the 100 top prescribers of oxycodone in the country, 98% were from Florida. After they passed that legislation, only two of the top 100 were from Florida. But they're cracking down on a problem that doesn't exist. Most people that go to a pain specialist who have chronic pain issues do not abuse their drugs. In fact, a recent study came out, 1% of people who get pain medicine from their pain doctor are likely to become addicted to that. So there's not much of a chance. And this 3 to 7 days is just not workable. Doctors won't be able to handle the workload. Elderly who are most likely to need the drugs can't get there every 3 to 7 days. The costs are going to be prohibited, because they're going to have to pay co-pays. It's just a strange, crazy situation. And so we're not really attacking the problem. There's a great article in Reason magazine, America's War on Pain. Pain pills is killing addicts and leaving pain patients in agony. And I hope everyone takes a look at that article in Reason magazine.
And they should read your op-ed in the Tampa Bay Times, too, about that very topic. Thank you all for a great show. That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, the PBS station here in Tampa. My guests were Daryl Paulson, who was the last voice you heard there. He is a professor emeritus at USF St. Petersburg. Patrick Mantega was on that panel. He's a Democrat, also the editor and publisher of La Gazzetta. Amy Holyfield is the editor for politics and a whole lot more at the Tampa Bay Times. And George Kretikos is the mayor of Clearwater, and he is a Republican. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and we're joined now by four high school students who are going to take part in several events in the next few days. Alex Barrow is here. He's from Hillsboro High. So is Aiden Bennett. And rejoining us from a few weeks ago, Julius Diaz and Sophia Amir.
Both Julie's and Sophia attend Blake High School, and Aiden is from Hillsborough High School. And first of all, I've got a really important... Did I name everybody right? Okay. So I've got a really important question to start off with. It's 11:30 in the morning on a Monday. You're high school students. How come you're able to come to a radio show? Can I ask that, Sophia?
We're on spring break.
Oh, and we haven't turned on your mic. There's a toggle switch. There you go. Yeah, you're on spring break.
Yes.
All right, because I was going to turn you into the authorities.
Yeah, we're on spring break, so we're good.
All right, good. So everything's legit. So you're able to be here. So you're involved in... you're involved in a response to the Parkland shootings, mm-hmm. the Parkland killings. Mm-hmm. You guys go to Blake, you guys go to Hillsborough High, right in Tampa. What's coming up? What are the events that are coming up? And Sophia, you want to start?
Yes. Well, this Wednesday, the 14th, we have a march against gun violence at 4 p.m. in Centennial Park in downtown Ybor. So we had a previous march that was very successful on February, Friday the 23rd. And we have another one coming up on the 24th that we are not organizing, but are attending. And then there is the 20th, which is Columbine's anniversary.
What a horrible anniversary that is,
yeah.
too. Yeah. About 20 years ago. So, Aiden Bennett, I want to ask you, what was your, when you heard about the Parkland shooting, what did you think?
Well, at first, you know, I thought, how come we allowed there to be another shooting? I was kind of thinking, oh, come on, we need to do something to, like, prevent shootings from happening. And then, you know, it's terrible. These are kids. These are the future of our country, and we're just allowing them to be, you know, gunned down in places they're supposed to be safe.
Do you think something like Parkland could happen here in Tampa?
You know, it's very possible. I mean, you really don't think about it, or we used to not think about, oh, this could happen to us, but with all of the shootings that are happening, it's very possible it could happen anywhere if we don't do something.
And Alex, let me ask you, how do you think adults have done in this? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, we're about reaching the anniversary of Columbine. So adults have been seeing this go on for years and years. Dozens of these mass shootings have gone on. How do you think we as adults have done?
Yeah, the adults have definitely failed us. They have failed this country. They have failed to introduce proper legislation. They have failed to create reform and initiate change. So the responsibility has now fallen upon us, the students. We have to take action. We have to initiate this change.
How active is Hillsborough High? When word got out about Parkland, what happened at Hillsborough High, which is in Seminole Heights, it's got the IB program, it's a big, big school. What did the students say? What did they do? How did they respond?
I know lots of us, the day after we heard about it, we were all upset. We were all very emotional. And when we heard about the March the 23rd, February, we all wanted to take part. Like, during the march, there were multiple students from Hillsborough High who spoke, gave speeches, and talked about those who were victims of the shooting.
Do you want a total ban on guns? Alex, do you want a total ban on guns?
Not a total ban on guns. Some can have handguns and certain rifles should be allowed, but however, weapons of war, automatic rifles, they should not be given to civilians. It's just unnecessary.
And Julie's last week when the state legislature ended its session, it decided not to ban these semi-automatic weapons that Alex was talking about. What did you think about what the legislature did the other day?
Honestly, it was kind of disgusting to not even give it a second glance, just to say that no, we're not going to put a ban on something that's been destroying societies and generations and peoples for decades and decades. It's like having this disease that you have the cure for, but not wanting to cure the disease. Mm-hmm. It's inhuman.
See, you know, I was driving to work at Channel 3 on the day of the big walkout from Blake High School, and I passed this crowd of like 200 or 300 students from Blake High School that had walked out, mm-hmm. and they were walking into Curtis Hickson Park. It was huge. And so when you got to Curtis Hickson, how many people were down there at Curtis Hickson?
500 plus, yeah.
So was it just Blake High School students, or was it other students as well?
No, we had other high schools join us. They came and joined us on our route.
So, Sophia, the legislature did not pass a ban on semi-automatic weapons. So what do you do next?
Well, we have a meeting tomorrow, CPC.
CRC.
meeting tomorrow in St. Pete at USF that we're going to attend and speak at. And they have the ability there to edit and revise legislation and put in language banning these weapons of war. So we're hoping we can get something done tomorrow at that meeting.
To get them to put it on the ballot this fall. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are you all going to go to the Constitutional Revision Commission meeting?
Yes, for sure.
So there will be a lot of high school students there to try to put pressure on the CRC.
Yes. I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in terms of learning about politics and civics and all that, Aiden, what kind of lesson is going on here for high school students?
Well, I think since right now, as a freshman in IB, I'm taking AP U.S. Government, I think it kind of puts a different perspective, and you kind of you get a real sense of how the government works when you participate in things like this. You understand that not only is it just like the adults that can do something in government, but we as high school students even can initiate change, such as in the civil rights movement when kids of all ages participated in marches and protests. So I think it's kind of cool.
I imagine it's more interesting than sitting in class.
Definitely.
They're getting involved in this kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's a better learning experience because you're actually doing something that has an impact. Besides, like, it's better than just sitting in a classroom taking notes.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to, would you say that most of your fellow students at Blake High School and at Hillsborough High agree that there should be a ban on semi-automatic weapons? Is that pretty much wherever?
Definitely. Yes.
Everybody
yes.
says
yeah.
that.
Yes.
What about the parents whose dads and moms have guns? Do you talk to any of those kids? Because I know a lot of parents do have guns. What are you hearing, Sophia?
I actually have a friend whose mother was helpful in getting more media to the march, and she talked to me about how she was definitely against having assault rifles and weapons of war available to the public.
But this is a family that has guns in the home.
Yeah, they have handguns, they have, you know, some guns, but she's definitely against having weapons of war available to civilians because it's unnecessary. She even agrees.
So, Alex, one of the questions that people have is, will high school students who are fired up about this issue, about the gun issue, will they register to vote this year, and will they turn out to vote in November, those who are turning 18 this year?
Yes, definitely. At the March the 24th, actually, there's going to be a voter registration booth where you can sign up. That way, when you're 18, you can automatically and immediately vote. So we're gonna definitely encourage people to vote and vote those who are unfit to serve out of office, those who have lost their morals.
Now, where is the local march on March 24th? And Julie's, do you know where that march is?
Curtis Hickson.
So it's going to be a Curtis Hickson. It's going to be a huge march. High school students from all over the Bay Area. I mean, mm-hmm. you represent two high schools. How many high schools do you think are going to participate in that March 24th rally at Curtis Hickson?
Around 40 to 45 different high schools.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. So does this make you want to go into politics? Julius, do you want to run for office eventually, or do you want to run for the legislature, or city council, or Congress?
No. I would like to write about these instances.
You'd like to be
a journalist?
Yeah.
Yes. But definitely not run in office.
Yeah. Okay. Well, journalism.
I'll leave that for Sophia.
Some of my best friends are journalists. So, Sophia, how about you?
Yes. I've wanted to be president since I was 7, so this is definitely the start of my career.
Okay. And you've been making public speeches. Mm-hmm. You were at Cafe Con Tampa a couple weeks ago. Yep. Nice article in the paper about you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yep. Julie's, were you there too?
Yes, and Alex.
And Alex was there too. Way to go.
Thank you.
Alex, how about you? Does this make you want to go into politics, or does it make you want to go into journalism? Or?
No, not really. But I would like to be active and participate in marches and try to create social revolution and change.
Okay. And Aiden, how about you?
I considered politics for a while, but I seeing how just the politicians, they can get caught up in the corruption, like power and greed, and they don't listen to the people who they represent. I don't want that to happen if I became a politician. So I was more considering, like, I think constitutional law, or like being, you know, a lawyer or a judge would be more interesting, because you're actually helping the people who are being oppressed by the government and the politicians.
One last question. Have you talked to any politicians so far in this? Everybody's nodding their head.
Yes.
Let me hear what your experience has been in talking to politicians. And Sophia, you want to start?
Well, most of them have been very helpful, except for a few. They are interested in what we're doing. They want to support us, and they're here for us. They believe in what we stand for. For example, Sean Shaw, he's been very helpful. He's actually donating money for us to be able to purchase snacks and water for the march.
He's a Democrat running for attorney general, but he's in the legislature right now.
Yeah.
And Julie's, how about you? Have you talked to any politicians?
I believe I talked to Sean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's
So he's supportive. Yeah.
Yes, he's. We're very grateful to have his support in this, and to see that there's an adult that has like a big crowd running for him that has a lot of background to help us out.
And really, Aiden, how about you? Have you talked to any politicians yet in this? Tomorrow, if you're going to go to the CRC meeting, you'll get to give people a piece of your mind. And Alex, how about you?
I've talked to Kathy Castor in the House of Representatives, and she's being a big help.
Mm-hmm.
She's gonna also donate money to help us purchase wristbands for the march, so we can show unity together. And she's been very helpful with that. And we're also talking with Kimberly Overman. She's quite helpful.
She's running for Hillsborough County Commission.
Yeah, she lets us use her office building as meeting places sometimes, and she's just been very helpful.
All right. Sophia, there's two events. One March 14th, March, and another March 24th. Mm-hmm. Tell us how folks can find out more about those events.
Facebook. There are Facebook events about them. Social media, just look it up. We're going to have flyers that we're going to be handing out for both. We're going to have a press release as well, give it out to our local media sources, and
Now, March 14th is this week. It's in the middle of the week. Mm-hmm. What time does that event happen?
It's at 4 p.m. at Centennial Park in downtown Ybor, and it should end at about 7 p.m.
Okay, and Alex, the event on March 24th, what do you know about it?
It's from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
And right in downtown Tampa, Curtis Hickson Park.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for coming by. I think, you know, you guys give us hope. Thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah.
And our guests have been Alex Barrow, Aiden Bennett, Julies Diaz, and Sophia Amir. Thank you so much for coming by WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
First time on the radio for you guys?
Yeah.
You were great. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa, and we're going to take a music break, and we will be right back.
Sure.
There's music from Oliver Mitsukudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Suzanne writes this, and this is what the students were talking about. There's a very important meeting tomorrow at the St. Pete USF Student Center. The Constitution Revision Commission will be taking comments from the public on whether or not to phase out greyhound racing in Florida. So that's a part of Suzanne's message. Also, as you heard, the students are going to call for a ban, at least to put before voters, a possible ban on semi-automatic weapons here in Florida. And Eve called and said that there is a march on March 24th in Sarasota. I suspect that as we get closer to March 24th, here on WMNF on 88.5 FM, you're going to hear a lot about the March 24th march. So, Eve, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. We'll open up the phone lines in just a little bit. I want to play a bit of sound before we start. And the first bit of sound is from President Trump when he was campaigning in Southwest Pennsylvania on Saturday night. We'll hear a bit of what the president said. He made an attack on a journalist who works for NBC, Chuck Todd, who hosts the Meet the Press show. So we'll hear a little segment of what Chuck Todd said about what the president said on Saturday. And then we're going to hear from 60 Minutes last night just a little bit of what Betsy DeVos, our education secretary, told Leslie Stahl. Very interesting stuff. So we'll hear that in a little bit. But first, here is President Trump Saturday night in Pennsylvania.
President Xi, president for life. I was joking, and I said, huh, president for life, that sounds good. Maybe we're going to have to try it. Maybe we're going to. President for life. But I'm joking. But I'm joking. South Korea came to my office after having gone to North Korea and seeing Kim Jong-un. And, no, it's very positive, no. After the meeting, you may do that, but now we have to be very nice, because let's see what happens. That Washington, D.C., it got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake. Look at them. A lot of fake media. Fake, fake media. It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
You know, he likes to put names on people. He did that through the entire presidential election, including all the Republicans that he beat. So these are campaign rally issues. This is something that is at a campaign rally, and the president likes making funny names.
If we're to dismiss everything he says at a campaign rally, as I think you're trying to imply, then are you saying we should cover these things?
You're putting words in my mouth. I wasn't in any way saying you should dismiss that whatsoever, and you should obviously carry them because these are important moments for the president, and this is news. What I'm trying to say is I'm focused on the policies.
Steve Mnuchin, the president's Treasury Secretary there last night, kind of skirting the question about whether or not it was appropriate for the president to call a reporter son of a bitch. And some people think that the president has gone way too far in his use of language and not appropriate for children and not an appropriate role model. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, last night, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who believes in privatizing schools and moving toward vouchers and private charter schools, was on 60 Minutes. She had a bit of trouble answering some questions. We'll hear some of the questions that she was asked by CBS's Leslie Stahl. This is last night on the CBS program 60 Minutes, the U.S. Education Secretary.
Why take money away from that school that's not working to bring them up to a level where they are, that school is working?
Well, we should be funding and investing in students, not in school buildings, not in institutions, not in systems. And
okay, but what
so
about
it should
the
be,
kids who are back at the school? It's not working. What about
if,
those kids?
Well, in places where there have been where there is a lot of choice that's been introduced, Florida, for example, the studies show that when there's a large number of students that opt to go to a different school or different schools, the traditional public schools actually the results get better as well.
Now, has that happened in Michigan? We're in Michigan. This is your home state.
Michigan, yes. Well, there's lots of great options and choices for students here.
Have the public schools in Michigan gotten better?
I don't know. Overall, I can't say overall that they have all gotten better.
The whole state is not doing well.
Well, there are certainly lots of pockets where the students are doing well.
But your argument that if you take funds away, that the schools will get better is not working in Michigan, where you had a huge impact and influence over the direction of the school system here.
I hesitate to talk about all schools in general because schools are made up of individual students attending them.
The public schools here are doing worse than they did.
Michigan schools need to do better. There is no doubt about it.
Have you seen the really bad schools? Maybe try to figure out what they're doing?
I have not intentionally visited schools that are underperforming.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should, yes.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos last night on CBS's 60 Minutes. You can see the whole program at CBS.com. Having a hard time answering questions about why Michigan schools have not improved after the state has moved towards vouchers and private charter schools. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Anonymous writes regarding the interview with the four high school students a moment ago, says, great conversation. Keep it up. Don't give up. The powers that be expect you to give up. You guys rock, writes 813. And James writes this, I don't always agree with Dr. Darryl Paulson, but pain meds, he's talking about the Florida This Week segment. He says, on pain meds, he is correct. With my copay, $50 per doctor visit once a month, how can I afford $50 every 3 to 7 days to get my prescription for pain medication, writes James. And then somebody from the 727 area code writes this, outstanding interview with those high school students. Thank you, WMNF. So thank you. And let's take some phone calls. We're going to go to Rosemary, who's in Tampa. Hi, Rosemary. You're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, I just would like to comment that it doesn't matter how much money he claims to have, he's uncool. I mean, who says that? I mean, who speaks like that? Is he supposed to be the leader of the free world?
You're talking about President Trump.
Yes, and yeah. Saturday, calling Chuck Todd. What have we ever heard about Chuck Todd? Never a scandal, never. I mean, and I just don't understand how these evangelical Christians continue to support him. Okay, I understand what he did in the past. Okay, it's the past, but he is still that same person, because evidence shows what comes out of his mouth.
Would you want
of the heart.
Would you want your 7-year-old or your 10-year-old to say
not.
SOB?
Of course not, and they will get punished or spanked or whatever. I mean, this is supposed to be our leader. Our children are supposed to look up to our president and want to be like him. I don't want my, at this point, grandchildren to be like him. No.
All right.
Unbelievable.
Rosemary, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Thank you. 813-239-9663. Georgia's in St. Pete. Hi, Georgia. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. I agree with the former colleague that in fact Trump is showing a great disrespect not only to Chuck Todd, but to the media in general. And this seems to be what authoritarian and fascist leaders do. It certainly was the playbook of Hitler, was to try to destroy and then control the media. So I have major concerns about that. But on the flip side of that argument is just, you know, again, him appealing to his base with basically schoolyard cons. He's behaving like the worst child on the playground. And no, it's not a good thing for our children to witness this kind of behavior.
All right, Georgia, thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Let's go to Bill in Homosassa. Bill, we just have 30 seconds. What do you think? All right, Bill hung up. Let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Daryl, what do you think? We just have 15 seconds.
Oh, well, just to think with the kids, very nice speech, and I'll listen at you guys later.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to comment about today's program, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. And at that number, at extension 115, you can record a comment about today's show. And we'll play those comments back on Wednesday, I think. That's the plan. Coming up next, you're going to hear the Midpoint program, but we've got a special program today. We're going to hear the Tom Hartman radio program because Sean Cannan is away. He'll be back next week. This is WM.